When a government can confiscate the earnings of the people with no restraint or no limit whatsoever on the amount that government takes, then government has become the master.
Didn't you say that all services were worth at least $5.15, and here there is a service that's being rendered to you personally, which you are not compensating at all?
No, I said to you earlier, unless someone decides that they want to volunteer.
During the election, all this enthusiasm for Bernie Sanders was taking place while people in Venezuela, under a socialist government, were starving. They were breaking into grocery stores to get desperate to get food.
Regulation.
What do you think should be the proper income tax rate?
Well, the best would be zero.
Hey, everybody. I just wanted to take a moment and kind of give a sort of summary about what this is. Me and my friend Rhett Koppel, who I've known for about 10 years, were having a little Facebook chat discussion about the election. That is today, actually, when you're listening to this. The election is today, and we decided to do our pre-election analysis and commentary. This is the first recording I've done in my new office here in Idaho, and as you can tell, I obviously need some sort of sound dampening devices. But we decided that it'd be fun to record just our predictions, and we ended up talking for an hour, and I thought it would be good to share with the Fight Laugh Feast community, and I hope you guys enjoy. So anyway, me and Rhett were talking on Facebook Messenger, and Rhett was like, we should record this conversation somehow. So I was like, all right, let's just go live. It'll be good. It'll be good to just sort of test out my new internet connection here to see if it's even capable of going live without stuttering.
So Facebook is making us jump through some loops today, huh?
Yeah, it is. Good. Yeah, it is. Let me pull up the chat so we can talk to people. So so before you were saying that you believe firmly that Donald Trump is absolutely going to win. What's your chances?
Okay,
Biden versus Trump.
It would be arbitrary for me to say chances, but I'll say this. I think his floor is 260 electoral votes. I think his ceiling is 326.
But how many does he need to win?
270.
So he could lose at 260.
He could lose mathematically, of course, but right now, and I'll cite you the data if you're willing to go there with me, but right now I think North Carolina, Florida, and Arizona are going to go to Trump, and that is his wall, and that gets him to 260. Mm-hmm. I don't consider Ohio, Iowa, Texas, Georgia in play. He's going to win those states, and then he's going to win North Carolina, Florida, and Arizona.
You think he is going to win Texas?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's going to win Texas. His internals had him up by 4 points in Texas. Yeah, I don't think it's close. I don't think it's going to be close. I don't think any of those states are going to be particularly close. I think they're going to have wider margins, with the exception of maybe North Carolina, and I don't know about Arizona, but Florida will have a wider margin. And I believe most of those other states will be about where they were in 2016. And if that's the case, he's at 260, and he only needs one Rust Belt state to get to 270. So Pennsylvania is worth 20 electoral votes. He is up 1.9 percentage points by Trafalgar. He has claimed in his own campaign internals that he's up, I think it was 2 points in Pennsylvania and it was 3 points. And we'll go to the stats there, but that's worth 20. Michigan's worth 16 electoral votes. Trafalgar has him up by 2.5 there as of today, 2.1, 2.5 in North Carolina, sorry. This is all rattling.
What's the name of the polls that you use? You said
so. Trafalgar is an independent polling firm.
What's it called?
Trafalgar Group. Trafalgar Group. You can look them up on Twitter.
Trafalgar.
Yeah, Robert Cahaley is the lead pollster there. He's been on Fox News and a number of other channels. They called 47 of 50 states correct in 2016. They called the 306 electoral vote win that Trump enjoyed perfectly. They got three states wrong. They said Wisconsin would go to Hillary, it ended up going to Trump. They said Trump would win Nevada and New Hampshire, they ended up going to Hillary. Nevada and New Hampshire are 6 and 4 electoral votes, respectively. Wisconsin is 10. So you flip them, and it's still 306. So they had it right. As they were much closer than of course, the polling firms in the legacy media and the big university polling firms in 2016. And my point is, the traditional, I guess you would say, wisdom, conventional wisdom, if you will, on polling is that you would want to use the aggregate of Real Clear Politics, okay? Because that's going to average all of the outliers. I don't think that's true anymore. Because we've lived through, since 2012, we've lived through multiple election cycles here. We've seen in the UK multiple election cycles there, and they are wildly off in the direction of the left every single time. And one example I'll give you is a poll earlier this week that came out. I think it was ABC had Biden up by 17 points in Wisconsin. He is not up by 17 points in Wisconsin. Okay, that's not the case. He's not up by 17 points in New York.
Yeah, okay? I would agree with you. Even like from a pessimistic view, I don't think Biden is up that much anywhere in the places that he is, other than like New York and California, of course.
Right. Trump and Biden's internals have him tied in Wisconsin. And I can only say this because Frank Luntz came out with a tweet, and I can share the link for you if you'd like, where he said that the pollster inside Trump's campaign is sharing these numbers. I had seen him in four or five different places, including a tweet that Trump himself had sent out where he claimed he was up by 3 in Pennsylvania and up by 2 in Michigan and up by 2, I think, in Wisconsin. No, I'm sorry. I did not say Wisconsin. One other state. I can't remember what he said in his tweet. I've got it somewhere. But essentially, excuse me for clearing my throat. See if I can find some links for you, Marcus, and you can show them if you want. But essentially, Trump's internals have him up in every swing state that he won, every single state that he won, except for Wisconsin, where they're tied. Trafalgar is saying the same thing. They have Biden. A couple of days ago, they had him up by 0.04% of a percentage point, or 0.4 of a percentage point, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
So half of a point. And it was trending in Trump's direction. He was down by almost 2 points in the last poll they did. I think he's going to win. I think undecideds are breaking for him. I just saw before we went live, Robert Barris, the People's Pundit on Twitter, said that late breakers in Pennsylvania are going for Trump 3-1. He now has Pennsylvania and Trump up by over a percentage point in Pennsylvania. So I do think he's going to win. I think he's like – I said his floor is 260 because I don't see him losing North Carolina, Arizona, or Florida. A lot of the panic you're seeing from the left right now is because of the in-person early voting showing good turnout for the Republicans, poor turnout for the Democrats, and a lot of demographics, including the black vote, which is down. In North Carolina, it's under 20%. And Trump is winning per his internals, winning 23% of the black vote, winning 39% of the Hispanic vote. So let's real quick, I know I've been going on, but let's put this coalition together. 95-96% GOP approval, right? Per his internals, 23% black vote, 39% Hispanic vote. To put that in perspective, he had 8% of the black vote in 2016. So he's almost tripled it, okay? Then you consider guys like Glenn Beck, Ben Shapiro, conservative evangelicals like you and I, Mormons. There's a lot of thoroughbred conservatives that are going to come home to him in 2020, right? You and I are an example of that. We didn't vote for him in 2016. He was somewhat of an unknown commodity as far as his political career is concerned, and now he's not. We know what he's about, essentially. Good, bad, and the ugly, if you will.
Right.
But all of those, if we think Glenn Beck and Ben Shapiro and conservative evangelicalism and Mormonism does not equate millions of people who sat out or voted third party in 2016, we're fooling ourselves. Not to mention Joe Jorgensen is not going to get the share that Gary Johnson did.
No. You know, it's interesting because I see a lot. I know way more people who voted who did not vote for Trump in 2016,
right,
that are going to vote for him in 2020. Doug Wilson is a good example of that. He was against voting for him in 2016, and now, and so I mean, I think it's clear Trump has, at least I guess like in the Constantine sense, he's seen that he needs the Christians to beat the bigger enemy.
There's no doubt about it.
And so but he hasn't just wooed them with platitudes. He's actually done some things that's been pretty significant. No. And so I think a lot of people have seen that, and a lot of enough of the religious right, is going to side with no. I mean, the Gospel Coalition is so small and tiny. they're just not like the thing with Twitter is like it. Twitter is very much your own bubble,
right?
And then you get outside that bubble, and then you just have thousands of like liberals just be angry and try to ratio you like today,
right?
It's not reality. Just because a thousand people retweet or share or leave a negative angry comment on my Twitter, like that's just not the real Twitter is not the real world, and it's really not and liberals might think it is, but I think that's going to be the shock. But here's where I think me and you were having this discussion. Liberals really like to fight. They're really good at it. Republicans are not good at fight. Like, Republicans are always on the defensive. It wasn't until Trump, really, that we sort of started to take a more offensive approach.
Trump came in swinging.
But liberals they've been fighting for a long time, and they're really good at it. And then they put up Biden. And then Biden is speaking at rallies with people in, you know, it's like 10 people surrounded by a 6-foot circle. And I was just like, the thing that I was just like, what is their game plan there? Do they just know they're going to lose against Trump? What I would say probably is more accurate. I believe they want to lose, and they want to riot and start a war.
So you think they're banking on a French Revolution type?
I think
deal.
They're banking on
violence.
Yeah, I think that's the Soros plan, right? Like that's where all his money is. If you listen to Soros's Open Society's lectures and all these things, like that's what he wants. He wants a nation to rip apart at the seams so he can come in and rescue it.
I think what's happening with the rioting is you're seeing the Bernie faction within the Democrat Party. So if we can break the Democrat Party down into two major competing factions, it's the neoliberal business Democrats that Biden represents.
There's no question that Biden is bought.
Right.
There's no question at all that he is, you know, somebody told me that, I think it's pretty accurate. It's like, you can't be president of the United States if they don't have pictures of you with children. If you're a liberal,
careful,
if you're a Democrat.
Careful, Marcus. Yeah. Joe Carter, right? About
well, I think it's true. I think in order to be promoted within the Democratic Party, they have to have stuff on you.
Bribery, blackmail.
Yeah,
it's always
This was Epstein's thing. There's no question about it. That there is this underhanded, deep state sort of. I don't even think it's a conspiracy at this point. It's pretty obvious. Yeah. And so what do you say? Like they would rather have a Biden that they can buy versus, let's say, like an AOC. Or Bernie, right? Like, there's no way.
I'm still convinced AOC is a plan. I mean, come on. That's just humor.
That'd be the best.
If you were going to draw up a plan, a caricature of someone, right, that would undermine the Democrat Party every time and give Trump capital at every opportunity, would you do it any different than AOC? You wouldn't. And who in the Democrat Party has been able to leverage Twitter like Trump does? Only her. She's the only one that leverages social media like Trump does.
Right.
Like right out of the same thing.
You think she's a conservative plant?
I think it's potentially the case. Yeah. I mean, come on. They do it to us. They're doing it to us in the church.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've heard that theory several times. They do that.
That's how they flip institutions. They can't create their own. They have to destroy and pervert.
Well, I mean, Planned Parenthood did that in Phoenix. The abortion doctor, Dr. Eunice, is a
is a Republican doing Republican fundraisers.
Right.
And so, I mean, he's got the backing and full support of Planned Parenthood, but he's a Republican. Why is that? Well, it's because it's because that's how they work.
Right.
So,
controlled opposition.
So it's not. It sounds crazy and nuts.
Right.
But it actually does happen on the left all the time. So, in real life. So yeah, no, that's absolutely true.
You said, why did they pick Biden, though? You want me to answer that one?
Well, I think we answered it. We answered it because he's just a cog in the wheel, right?
Well, and it was to stop Bernie. It was ultimately to stop Bernie. If you remember,
you're saying they had to put up Biden just to stop Bernie.
Yes, they didn't want to. They were trying to propel everybody. Well, first of all, let's start at the beginning. They wanted Kamala, right? They wanted Kamala. That was clear. The media wanted Kamala. Yeah, then Tulsi nuked her from orbit, right? Yeah, and that was it. Kamala, sure, they had to scrape her off the floor like a pancake.
No, that's 100%. Yeah, Tulsi.
And so after that, it was like they didn't want Joe because they knew what we're getting right now is what we would get with him. And so they were, here's Warren. Well, Warren's got her own issues with the truth and the Pocahontas thing and all that. And then you had, Pete Buttigieg or whatever his name is. They were trying to push him down our throat.
Pete Buttigieg. Like,
yeah, right. But anybody but Biden. Anybody right. but Biden. And then the eve of Super Tuesday, what happens? Obama makes the phone call and all of a sudden everybody's dropping out and endorsing Biden. Why? Because they had to stop Bernie. They had to stop Bernie. And this is what I've been saying for a long time. They were going to have this election, no matter what they did, they were going to have to walk a very tight line between keeping the Bernie bro socialist contingency in that coalition happy and still being able to appeal to moderates and swing voters. And I'm not certain it's possible.
They didn't.
They didn't do what?
I don't think they either. I don't think the Bernie people are going to, like the hardcore Bernie people, I don't think they're going to turn out for Biden.
No, I don't either. I don't think the people writing are going to vote. I think they're writing because they realized when Bernie was not given the nomination for the second time, they realized they're not going to get they're not going to get their revolution through democracy. They've realized that now.
Mm-hmm.
And like you were saying, I think now they think the only way they're going to get their revolution is through violence and intimidation. And we'll see if it's going to work out for them. I don't think it will. I don't think it's going to work out too good. No. But I mean, we'll see. We look at the data. Another thing, the Iowa poll.
But when you look at the polls, you go to the data, and but what I could say, the data showed that Hillary was going to win too. She was up.
So that we need to back up and talk about. We started to go down that road. Legacy media polls and university polls. Let me ask you this: if you could name two institutions in this country that are more politically compromised and politically leveraged, what would they be?
Hold on 1 second. Kyle, stop posting those comments on my Facebook page. You're going to get me banned. It's all going to be your fault.
I hope I get to see those comments before you delete. I don't even know what you're talking about.
All right. You got to be careful, man. You got to be careful. You got to control your comments. Don't say it.
An article about us, man. A bunch of QAnons over here.
Yeah. So, but no. I think what were you saying? So Hillary's polls showed her up 10.
Right. So name two institutions in this country. What are the two most politically weaponized, politically compromised, politically leveraged institutions in our country? Everything they do is for the purpose of getting Democrats elected to public office. What are they? Universities and legacy media. The legacy media and university polls, they've been wrong since 2012. They've been wrong in the UK. The Brexit vote, the vote earlier this year where the conservatives won all those parliament seats. OK, they were wrong in 2016. And then they tried to gaslight us and say they fixed it for 2018. They were wrong in 2018. They were telling us the Republicans were going to lose the Senate. They ended up gaining a seat. All right. They said, I posted earlier in the week, they had Andrew Gillum. CNN published a poll saying Andrew Gillum was 14 points ahead of Ron DeSantis 2 weeks before DeSantis won that race. Okay, the Siena New York Times posted a poll that had Bill Nelson 16 points ahead of Rick Scott in the senatorial race, and Rick Scott, of course, won that race. Okay, that was 2 weeks before that race took place as well. So they didn't fix it in 2018. And it's not right today. So if you want to take the aggregate of RCP, which is the traditional conventional wisdom, you have to say, okay, well, they're including polls that say Wisconsin's plus 17 Biden. ABC had a poll that said plus 17 Biden, Wisconsin. Now his internals, Trump and Biden's internals, are saying it's tied. Trafalgar, who was correct in 2016 and correct, by the way, in the Florida senatorial and gubernatorial races in 2018, they called that the only polling firm to get it right. They have the race effectively tied. Last poll was a couple days ago and had Biden, I think, 0.4 of 1% of points, so about a half of a point. And it's tied in Wisconsin. The internals have it tied. And the RCP average is including plus 17 polls. So you got to throw that out the window. I look at data points that are independent polling firms. And then every other data point beyond that, from yard signs to enthusiasm to rally participation. Right.
That's the killer for me.
All of this is pointing to Trump.
The 96 mile. I think Rod Martin. See if I can find this. I think.
It's absurd. It's absurd.
I think Rod Martin.
Registrations. The GOP is gaining registrations nationwide, man.
Yeah.
And if they're registering as GOP, they're voting GOP.
Of course.
And take this into consideration. If they want to talk about the independent split, how many independents from 2016 have registered as GOP now? So if Trump has an equal or greater share of the independents that he did in 2016, he's probably got a bigger coalition altogether.
Right.
Because some of those independents are now Republicans, registered Republicans.
Yeah, I think it was Rod Martin that shared the two images of the two rallies. I don't remember. Maybe it wasn't. But somebody on Facebook shared the two images of one was his last rally that had 56,000 people at it.
Yeah, and by the Pennsylvania.
And then the other one was the 96-mile line from Phoenix to Tucson.
Yeah.
Which is insane.
Right. Like that.
And his comment was, never in the history of the world has there been so much voluntary support for a presidential candidate. So that's the thing that part of me thinks the trap that Trump laid was accepting the coronavirus as a thing. And forcing the Democrats to run on this everybody's going to die sort of thing.
A fear campaign.
And then when he comes out and says, we're just going to have rallies. And they have to, he knows playing chess, he knows that they, in order to be consistent, can't do rallies at the scale. You know, they can't buy people to come in.
They can't hang with them.
They can't do it. And so you know, their only move was to do these like drive-in rallies,
right?
And then that created the greatest meme in history, as far as I'm concerned, which is the Trump supporters following the Biden bus. Which is,
did you see today? They said it was their people, the Biden people, that started that altercation. They tried to say the Trump truck was driving into the Biden person that was following the bus. It was a huge thing. The FBI was investigating it and everything. You know, they do everything. any chance the FBI has to virtue signal the left, they do it. But, dude, you're going to love this. Here's what I'm going to say about that, about COVID. Okay, Trump was coasting to reelection before COVID hit. All right. If you remember, COVID hit right after impeachment, and we're not even talking about impeachment anymore. The Democrats were deflated. And then when COVID came around, they thought they had a chance. So the strategy was a campaign of fear, tell their people to vote by mail, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they were going to win by voter fraud through the courts, all the way to the Supreme Court, because we all know Roberts at this point is compromised. It's pretty clear. And that was the strategy. But what happened, Marcus? Do you remember what happened a couple of weeks ago?
No.
Somebody died. Oh, Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Right.
RBG
right.
Kicked the bucket, man. And as soon as she kicked the bucket, they switched on a dime. They told their people to stop voting by mail and to go in person and vote. because as soon as it became clear that Amy Coney Barrett was going to be confirmed, they realized that this strategy had just gotten blocked through the death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg and the confirmation of Amy Coney Barrett. So I think now what they have, they for months have been promoting this campaign of fear. Their base, because their hardcore partisan base is going to do, they hang on every word. They're going to do whatever they're told to do. And if they're told to vote by mail, they're going to do it. So all of their partisans have voted by mail. And the Republicans have all but caught up to their lead, their early vote lead with in-person early voting in almost every state, with the exception of Pennsylvania, which I think there are reasons for that. But anyway, I don't think people that are left are going to want to go out and vote. Think about this. You're an average blue voter, Democrat voter. You're likely in an urban area. You're going to have to stand in line for 2 to 3 hours. You're terrified of COVID. You're going to have to be around all of these people, right? And you don't even like Biden that much. Are you going to show up and deal with that when you're already been had, you know, the devil scared out of you about COVID? I mean, they have been fear mongering right down the street. One of my neighbors who has a Biden sign in their yard set up this little box. I'm not kidding, with plexiglass or some sort of contraption where he could hand candy to trick or treaters and be behind the protection of this plexiglass or whatever. It's like insane. That person's going to show up and wait three hours to vote for somebody. You know, I don't think so. He either voted by mail like he was told to, or he's not going to show up. And right now, what I think is going on, if you look at CBS, they had this poll, and also the Des Moines Register, who released their Iowa poll a couple of days ago that had Trump up 7 in Iowa. They also had independents going 14 points for Trump. Okay. And they had the CBS poll had this as well, and the Des Moines Register poll. They had Trump winning in election day turnout 2-1. If that holds, okay, if that holds, now 90 million people have already voted and only 138 million voted in 2016. So we're more than halfway there. But if the 2-1 margin holds, and it's been holding on in-person early voting, if that holds, he's going to cream them. He's going to clean up. I don't think he can lose Florida at this point. Florida, they have over 200,000 super voters. They call them 4-for-4 super voters. And what that means
is
you are registered as a Republican or as a Democrat, and you voted in 4 of the last 4 elections, including the midterms. So for us, that would be 2012, 2016, 2018. I'm sorry, 2010, 2012, 12, 14, 16. Yeah, 10, 12, 14, 16. No.
Yeah.
12, 14, 16, 18.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. Right. 12, 14, 16, 18. So you would have voted in the last 4 elections and you're a registered Democrat or Republican. You're considered a super voter. Well, guess what? The Democrats blew their super voters in their vote by mail scheme. They've all voted. They've all voted. Go look at the numbers. And in fact, if you look at Trump's campaign manager's Twitter today, he was talking about this. He went state by state showing how many super voters the Republicans have and the margin they expect to have in each state. And he has them winning every state. I'm sorry?
Who did this?
His campaign manager. I'm going to have to look it up myself.
It was Trump's campaign manager?
Yes. Trump's campaign manager. Trump campaign manager on Twitter. Let me look it up. And because I don't have his name on the top of my head. Not him, Bill Stipien. Bill Stipien, not Pascal anymore. It's Bill Stipien, and I will actually go right now and copy and put it in the comments so people can go read. Earlier today, he broke down state by state what he expects. The Trump campaign believes they're winning. Look, first of all, look at the last couple of days. Does Trump look like a guy who's losing an election at these rallies? He's out there dancing, partying, having a good time, playing videos of Biden's gaffes and laughing it up on stage. I don't know if you saw that from Miami yesterday, but they played a hilarious montage of Biden's gaffes, and Trump was just eating it up. The crowd was eating it up.
Dude, that's one of the best campaign strategies I've seen, is to have a screen at these rallies.
Yeah, because you blow right through the
commentary. But if you think about the brilliance of this, and I'm a media guy, and all these red state Republican guys, all these conservatives, they watch Fox News. They listen They listen to talk radio. So they're used to commentary content.
Right.
And then that's really what's really thriving on YouTube right now is commentary content too, which is just So the whoever's idea that was, I don't know if it was Trump's or one of his campaign managers, it is absolutely phenomenal. And it's amazing that they haven't done that. It's amazing that they haven't done that before, because my wife is just watching the rally that he – this is the fifth rally he's done too, by the way.
He's doing five every day.
He's doing five a day.
He's probably doing his last rally right now in Michigan.
And he's 70-some years old, and he's still running the country.
And he just got over COVID.
The work ethic of the guy alone is tremendous.
Marcus, if I was still a dispensationalist.
Okay, go ahead.
Peace deals with Israel.
Yeah. With Israel. Well, I was wondering what you know that red button meme? It's like Trump's greatest president of all time, peace deals in Egypt in Middle East. Right. Trump is the Antichrist. Peace deals in the Middle East. And then there's just the guy going.
He gets COVID and goes into a hospital for 3 days and walks out like nothing happened. Come on.
Yeah, right.
I don't tell you the dispensational Antichrist is on the scene. I don't know what does.
It's the resurrection, right?
I'm going to cost you.
Right. I just wonder, though. I wonder because, you know, like, I was actually thinking about going through and watching some Jim Baker stuff on the Middle East peace deal stuff. And it's because I was kind of, because he's always talking about how the Antichrist is going to come and bring peace in the Middle East, but he's also always talking about how Trump is the greatest president of all time.
Right.
So I just always wonder if there's any internal conflict with him whatsoever, but probably not. I don't think they're smart enough to.
They're not picking up on it.
Yeah.
It's funny though, when you think about it, there's a lot of things that, you know, who knows, maybe we'll see some flying helicopter swordsmen or whatever it is.
you
better get off of dispensationalism, man.
I remember where I was in 2016 on election night. I was actually at Apologia Studios, and I was just, I think me and you were probably talking that night, remember?
I'm sure we did.
Yeah, no,
I'm
sure I think we were.
I think
I messaged you. We could probably go back into Facebook messages and find those things. Because I think I Facebook messaged you and I was like, what just happened?
Well, I called that one too. Remember?
I called that one too. You called that?
I did. Yeah. I said he was going to win. And the reason I said that was they were all in Florida and North Carolina. And then like 3 days before the election, they all ran up to Wisconsin and Michigan and Pennsylvania. And then these weren't even – some of them weren't even considered to be swing states. Mm-hmm. And why are they all campaigning there? Who's on offense? Who's on defense? You know, again, here they are. Joe Biden is up by 15 bazillion points, but he's campaigning in Minnesota, a state no Republican has won in half a century. That makes no sense, Marcus. That makes no sense. Today, in a conference call, his campaign said that Trump only needs one more state. Again, I said his floor is 260. I think that's what they mean. If he wins one of those Rust Belt states, it's over. And I think right now they realize they're not winning Arizona. They're not winning North Carolina. They're not winning Florida. They have to run the table in the Rust Belt. Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, Minnesota, they have to run the table. And Trump could still win without them if he pairs together New Hampshire and Nevada. So this is what I would tell people to do tomorrow. Around 8 o'clock when the results start to come in, watch New Hampshire. Because New Hampshire's probably, of the consensus swing states, it's probably the hardest one for Trump to win. And if he's competitive in New Hampshire, it's going to be a long night for the Democrats. It's going to be a very long night. If he's competitive in Maine and Virginia, which nobody is expecting. But another data point that people don't realize is in the in-person early voting, non-college educated white vote has a double-digit increase in the market share, in the voter share of the in-person early vote. People are coming out. The peasants are coming out to vote for their boy. That's what's going on. They're coming out and they realize he's for them now. He's not all talk. Okay. And then I don't know how the Democrats think they're going to win Pennsylvania if they're going to run against fracking. This goes back to AOC. As soon as that whole thing in the debate happened with Biden and fracking and the oil industry, it was AOC tweeted out, fracking is bad, actually. That's what she said. Fracking is bad, actually. AOC, you trying to help them win Pennsylvania or not? What are you trying to do? Because you ain't winning Pennsylvania.
I've said this today, and I said it like the very moment we were packing up our house in Arizona, and I think we were like we just had the debate playing on a laptop because we didn't have any more furniture in the house. And we were watching this debate, and it was that moment where Biden said he would get rid of oil and he would get rid of fracking. And it was when Trump said, did you hear that, Pennsylvania?
Yeah.
I told my wife, I said, if the election comes down to Pennsylvania, it's that moment. Like that's the moment. Because it's very rare that you see when you watch a debate or something, it's very rare you see a single moment. It's like, oh, that's the moment. Like that's right. The line. That's the thing.
That night he lost Pennsylvania. I think he lost Pennsylvania as soon as he said that.
Yeah, I think so. Sometimes you watch these things and you know, there's all these like rah-rah moments or all these lines. You're like, oh, that's a good line. That's a good line. But there was something that when that happened, I was like, well, that's.
I'll tell you what it was.
Really devastating. There was like and then Trump went out to Pennsylvania and played the clip over again.
Yep. Over and over again.
And then he said, I told you I'd put it on my website. Here it is on my website.
Yep. He can't get away with that. You know what that issue was? That what told you right then and there that he had just stepped in it was the moderator. Because when he said what he said, and then Trump said, whoa, that's a big statement. She said, why would you say that? She said it like that. Why would you say that? Like, you idiot. Why would you say that? Are you trying to win or not? That was kind of the attitude. Like, that was the tone in which she asked the question. Why would you say that? Not why would you say that? It was, why would you say that? Like she was in his campaign.
Like she just wanted to quit and walk away at that moment.
Like a face palm.
Oh, man. That is funny.
Jack Posobiec said that when he came backstage, he said that someone in the news media organization, left-wing news media organization, said it's going to be a long second term.
Oh, man. I was trying to find. It'd be funny to see if I could.
Am I lifting your spirits at all, man? Because you told me you were nervous, and that's why I said we need to talk.
Yeah, well, I mean, first off, I'm not nervous in the sense of, I mean, personally, I think, if Biden wins, I'll be fine. So I'm not like nervous in that sense, but I was kind of like nervous, like for Trump. I guess, just for the country in general, I think there's all like when you like if you could see.
It's okay, man. It's okay to be nervous because there's a lot. Right? I mean, I know we all say, "Oh, most important of a election ever." You know, Sean Hannity is famous.
I heard Sean Hannity say that tonight, and I'm just like, oh, it's every election.
Yeah, but you cried wolf. You said it every election.
Right.
But this time it actually is. This
election matters.
Right.
Because I think. Trump has caused, rightfully so, and we talk about within church, like when is it okay to spread division? Like when does that matter? And right. And so there are like Trump has spread division in a good way. He's essentially been used to separate the wheat and the tares. You can see the alliances with ERLC and the Gospel Coalition.
You know exactly where everyone stands.
And we would have never seen that without Trump. They would have still kind of kept the mask on as long as they possibly could. Imagine Hillary Clinton as president, and then you have Russell Moore publicly saying about how terrible Hillary Clinton is while secretly meeting with her.
Right.
Right. Yep. So now at least we know where he stands. We know all these things, and Russell Moore met with Obama like 8 times and
It's all over the organization.
Yeah. I mean, it's all public information. So I think like we've seen a lot of good and like part of me, like, I mean, my hope is that division stuff still spreads. Like that people get more angry and whatnot over that. Cause I think it's been great. I think it's
this. That's inside and outside of the church, by the way.
Absolutely.
The Never Trump movement has been. It's been illuminating because you see who really is for the Republican base and who is just simply, going to throw you some red meat every 4 years to get in office and tell you to hold your nose and vote for them. you know. Right. But when it came their time to vote for a guy that they had their to hold their nose for, they weren't willing to do it. And they showed, and they're telling you right now, they have more in common with Joe Biden and Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama than they ever did with you or me.
Right.
And we know that's true. And then, of course, in the church, you're right. It's an illuminating thing, because I think what's happened is I got to be careful. I think what is happening is that things have been expedited. There's been a plan in the works for a long time, but Trump has frustrated that to a degree, mm-hmm. to the point where I think they've expedited it, and they've showed too much of their hand too soon, and they're getting the pushback they didn't expect to get. Mm-hmm. And I think to a degree, you know, I think, first of all, my theology of Trump's presidency is that God is using him to thwart the globalists. Essentially, they're trying to rebuild another Tower of Babel. They're trying to centralize authority in this globalistic government or what have you, and be an ultimate authority. And Trump's undone everything they've done in the last 30 or 40 years in 3 or 4 years of his presidency, just completely obliterated it. And they didn't see it coming. And he's used the internet in large part to do that as well. So I think what's funny is, remember after Romney lost in 2012, and everybody was given the autopsy of his dead, rotting corpse. What do we have to do in the Republican Party to win elections and to appeal to the electorate? And all we heard was, we have to appeal to minorities. We have to appeal to women. We have to appeal to every identity group that the left always throws around. And the way that the Never Trumpers thought they were going to do that was to virtue signal, right? Was to join the Democrats, out-Democrat the Democrats, essentially, in their identity politics when they have a 60-year head start. Trump has done exactly what they said they needed to do. 23% black approval, 39% Hispanic approval. Okay, I saw today, I think he's winning a third of the homosexuals. So Trump, he's, yes. No, he's got guys like Richard Grenell. I think there's a contingency, and I think it's okay for Christians to say this, to make this distinction. There's a contingency within the homosexual community, if you will, that is not militant. They might not be repentant. They might not have guilt over their sin, but they're not militant. They don't want to hurt people and injure people like the militant left do. And I think Richard Grenell is an example of that.
Well, that contingency is in every demographic.
Right, right. They're malicious people. Yeah. And then there are people who are not malicious, who just want to have a libertarian perspective about it, if you will, or idealistic libertarian perspective.
Well, I mean, an example that would be, you know, like someone like Peter Thiel. Or someone like that, yeah. So I mean, yeah, that's within any demographic, and I think that spectrum within homosexuality is the same, just as it is within a black community or the Hispanic community or stuff like that. But you know, like you know, that would be one of my hesitations about Trump. Really, is, you know,
he has appealed to them. Yeah,
yeah, he's appealed to them, and he's, you know, embraced them in a way that, you know, it still brings judgment on our nation either way, either candidate. So,
but here's what I would say. I would say that he is actually creating the diverse coalition that they said they wanted when Romney lost. But he's not doing it their way by virtue signaling. He's doing it through populist economics, through lifting up the working man, giving him an opportunity to make a living. Right. And to support his family and to sustain some generational, you know, stability or what have you. There are people. How many minorities do you know, Marcus, that they might vote Democrat, but they will say openly, we don't think the Democrats are for us either. Right. There's this prevailing wisdom in minority communities that says they're all rhetoric. All of their virtue signaling is essentially all we ever get from them, mm-hmm. is rhetoric. Right. Trump has offered something of substance. Again, we talk about how the Never Trumpers, they want style over substance. So mean tweets, Marcus, is the worst thing in the world. And it doesn't matter what the platform is. Doesn't matter what the policies are, because remember, that's all amoral in their worldview. Right.
Yeah.
It's the tweets. It's the style over substance. Well, Trump is not style over substance. He's substance over style. And there are people in every demographic that can identify with and appreciate substance over style. You want to win African Americans, you want to win Hispanics, you got to offer them something that Democrats aren't. Say, like, I don't know, a job, you know, a career, an income, right? Something they can have a family with. You want to help the fatherlessness, and you want to help the breakdown of the family. Give them the ability, help them have the ability to provide for their family. Oh, by the way, that might help with the drug problem too, because now they're not tempted to go and sell, you know, and I'm not saying minority in general, but poor folks in general are not going to be tempted to gain money through illicit gains.
Poor people always try to make money through the freest of markets.
Right. And if it's the black market, so be it.
The black market is the freest of markets.
Right.
So the drug problem is a result of, I mean, that's a whole different conversation, but it's a result of government regulation within black communities.
Right.
So, there's no question about it, right? Like, you can't, you know, they've legalized marijuana, but made it impossible for black people to open up marijuana shops because of regulations and stuff like that. Right.
Yeah,
so,
right.
You know, it's true. So I mean, but that's just with anything, yeah. But I think, let me ask you this. Do you think, let's say Trump wins tomorrow, will it be close or a landslide?
That I don't know. See, so here's what I would say. His floor is 260. I think his ceiling's 326. Unless we want to get crazy and say he could win.
326 a landslide.
I mean, in today's divided electorate, I would say, yeah, he's not going to win California. He's not going to have a Reagan landslide.
You don't think he's going to win California? There's
no,
people that are saying it's in
play. He'll lose California by millions.
Yeah, there's people saying it's in play now.
No, you need to stop listening to the people. Okay, the people are hanging out in the
comments of this very video, my friend.
No, those people are got some illicit deals with Hunter Biden, man. You need to stop listening to them. Unless they're... He's not winning California. I mean, he's going to do better in California. He'll probably help the down ballot in some of those red districts, maybe swing some of those House seats back. But there's no way he's ever going to win California. I know the northern – what is it? The helmet north of or whatever model that had him win in New York. That's crazy. I don't know what people are thinking. He's not winning New York and California, Maryland. And, you know,
the question is – you know, you have a lot of people that are fleeing California who are conservative. They're leaving.
Right. Right.
And the question is, are there enough Democrats who are of sound mind that can look around and go, yeah, Newsom is destroying us?
Yeah, I think there's some of that. Do you listen to Tim Pool? Do you check out his content at all?
Tim Pool?
Yeah.
I'm aware of him, but I haven't really listened to him that much.
Okay, so he's a liberal. There's a number of guys like this, but he's a liberal, self-described liberal, and he's voting for Trump. He voted for Obama, and then in the second Obama's midterm, he did not vote, and now he's voting for Trump. And he says he knows at least 30 people who are Democrats, who are liberal, who have told him to his face they are going to vote Republican all the way up and down the ballot, and the rioting is why. I honestly, Marcus, and they also say don't tell anybody. Obviously, they're scared to death. You probably could put 10 liberals in a room, and you have four of them saying, you know, willing to tell you privately, they'd vote Republican down by it. They're so scared, but they don't want the others to learn that, including the other three liberals that are going to do the same exact thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think there's a lot of that. How much I don't know. But I do think people are getting fed up. And I think if it is a landslide, Marcus, that's where things get interesting. Because if it's a landslide.
I'm the storyteller. So like I'm always like rooting for like, you know, the underdog in the World Series, like that sort of thing. It would be like my hope is tomorrow night, California goes red. Like that, like I would
put it
just
down,
love,
Marcus.
Like I would just, I just would just love to see that. It would be, I would be so incredibly happy. Like that's just a, like I don't think it's gonna happen, but there's a part of me that goes, what, like just how many people in, you know, once that curtain is closed behind them, are gonna vote for Trump that would never admit it. And I think there's a lot of people like that that's going to be that way anyway. But
yeah,
I just wonder, these states like New York and California are being destroyed by liberalism.
Completely.
I mean, New York City is dead.
It's a ghost town. Yeah. It's terrible.
You would think
when you have these towns, I mean, these states that are absolutely destroyed, and the liberals are saying, well, we need to keep things closed down even tighter.
Right.
You would think that, you know, no matter how given over to a depraved mind you are, that you would at least have some bit of rationality to be able to conclude, right. Well, wait a minute. That's not the way, because that's what got
it's
us into
this.
Yeah, that's got us into this. And then you got to think about all the small business owners who might be liberals or Democrats that lost their business.
Former small business owners now.
Yeah, former small business owners who lost their business as a result of this. And I mean, there's a lot of, it'll be really interesting, man. I mean, obviously like Northern California is probably going to go red. And then, you know, I mean, you're always going to have like LA and stuff, but there might be some smaller towns that are in play that aren't as liberal as the media.
Oh, they're going to flip some seats. They're going to flip some House seats in California. The Democrats did very well there in 2018, but I think that the Republicans are going to take some of those seats back. I think that that's probably going to happen. I don't know how many. I hope it's a lot. But if it's a landslide for Trump, here's the thing, Marcus. Cancel culture, riots, totalitarianism, it would be a rebuke of the left's aggressive, illiberal embrace.
Yeah, so part of me is thinking like, It would destroy. I mean, the Democratic Party could not exist and function as it remains if they lost California.
No, because they're already
fractured.
They'd
have to swing right. They would have to.
Right. They'd have to reform if they want to win. But here's the problem that they face. They have the neoliberal business Dems and they have the Bernie contingency, and they will both blame each other. If they lose in a landslide, they're going to say the other faction inside the party was why. Right. Mm-hmm. And so you're going to have this vicious civil war. It's going to get bloody. It's going to be nasty. And I don't know if they're capable of reforming. The problem is,
they can't.
And not only that, they have such a hegemonic culture that's going to reinforce all of their vain fantasies. OK, the worst thing they could do is another rescuing device like a Mo Russia nonsense that's going to try to, you know, retroactively justify these egregious polls. And say, you know, yeah, I know it says we're way off, but it's because, you know, Trump suppressed the vote, or, you know, there'll be 30 million more votes this time, but they'll say Trump suppressed the vote. They'll do something. And because they lean into the confirmation bias of the left base, of the Democrat base, they will embrace it. And if that happens, if they harden their hearts and stiffen their necks to reality, and we're talking about natural law now, we're not even talking about spiritual law. We're not talking about the gospel. We're just talking about reality. We're talking about metaphysics. We're talking about the natural revelation of God. And if they harden themselves to reality, then reality every 4 years is going to come around and give them another beating. That's what's going to happen. Okay. They have to reform because they are scaring the daylights out of people. People are terrified of cancel culture. They're terrified of the riots. They're terrified of Antifa. They're terrified of this illiberal totalitarianism. Here, you and I are conservatives, right? They'll never embrace conservatism. The right. Democrat Party will never be conservatives, but they can at least go back to embracing liberalism. They don't embrace liberalism anymore.
Right, no.
They embrace illiberalism.
Right.
They embrace totalitarianism, and that's why I think they're heading for a rebuke from the electorate. And we know the deep state bureaucracy will not prosecute their scandals. The media will not report their scandals. So the only group of people who can hold them accountable is the electorate. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is going to happen. I think that reality is going to smash these polls tomorrow and smash their perception of, I mean, they've been wrong about everything, Marcus. Spygate, Russiagate, impeachment, they've been wrong. They've literally done everything they've done on the backs of their confirmation bias, of their base.
Right.
And then just this Twitter monster, they just get on there and just, you know, it's just talking points coming out like rapid fire, you know. I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do, but it's ugly. I think they're going to be in bad shape. Worst of our lifetimes, I think.
Yeah, I was there's a friend of mine I haven't spoken to in a long time. This is the one good thing,
right,
I think.
Talk to me now.
No. This is the one good thing I will say that came out. I think I think that Doug mentioned this in his sermon maybe 2 weeks ago, where he's talking about tumultuous mercies. And he was essentially, because a lot of people look at all the things that, all the division that Trump has caused as a sign of judgment. And Doug was saying that this is actually a mercy, because it's not, because there's actual fights that are happening, as opposed to like Sodom and not Sodom and but Noah, like Noah's Ark, or was it Sodom? I don't remember. But they were eating and drinking. Yeah, it was Noah's Ark. They were eating and drinking and celebrating and marrying up until the floodwaters came, right? But that's not happening here. Right. There's an actual fight over stuff, and it's not he said this too. Most elections, it's like, well, how fast do you want to go over the cliff? Do you want to go over there slow, or do you want to go fast? But with Trump, he's actually trying to apply brakes.
Right.
There's an actual, no, we're actually going to stop and try to go the other direction.
Fighting
which
uphill.
Is something we don't, yeah, we which is something we don't see. So I definitely think, dude, honestly, man, I remember in 2016 when Trump, that night, when I was sitting in the studio and I was like, holy cow, Trump just got elected. He's president of the United States. It's insane. I mean, he just beat Hillary Clinton. And I was just like, what is going to happen? And I think what we've seen, I have a friend I haven't spoken to in a long time. And over the past several years, he hasn't been able to find a good church. And it caused a lot of trouble with him. Because of this, he was able to find a good church. And it was actually someone I know in Georgia. And he was able to, and I've heard a lot of stories of these people have been able to find these really good churches as a result of this, because of COVID, everything shut down. And the only thing left are these churches that are literal oases for people.
Yeah, that are still meeting.
You know, like Apologia grew by like at least 25%. John MacArthur's church grew by 25%. All these churches that have remained open and solid and stood firm. It's like Darren
Doan says. And unrestricted.
Yeah, it's like Darren Doan says, like the new orthodoxy is just backbone.
Right.
He goes, the church has debated baptism, the church has debated all these other things, but really what's going to happen now is just, does your church have backbone or not?
And there's a threshing going on. There's a threshing going on. And
yeah,
I think
it's
what's
beautiful to see, but it's not like, I don't feel like it's a judgment at all.
Yeah, well, it's painful because you see men that you respect or once respected kind of waffling.
Yeah.
But
They were always waffling. You just see it.
Yeah, it's
like it's not new. Right?
Right.
So I think that's the thing is like there's such a clear, like it's really great to see it. It's like and it's not even like a judgment that's as bad as it could be. You know, because this same thing would be beautiful if everybody who went to church was thrown in prison and executed, and then the churches that still remain. I heard a pastor sit there and try to use, I mean, it was just the craziest thing I've ever heard. And he said that, well, the Chinese government limits the population of churches to 100, and the Chinese people follow it, so therefore we should be able to limit our congregational sizes because of COVID or whatever. And I was just like, that's not even the same thing. Like if the reason the Chinese underground church limits their population size by 100 is not to attract attention to themselves and have the people executed.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So you hear these crazy, stupid, like these stupid things, and you just go, the churches that are remaining strong are really solid. So it's just.
And the sign of that is their meeting.
And I would take another 4 years of that any day. Like, so.
Yeah. Let's illuminate. Let's thresh. You know what I think is really
and Twitter cool. And Twitter is just nowhere near as fun without angry liberals. So the angrier the liberals get, the better Twitter is. That's...
Can you imagine? Let's just say humor ourselves for a minute. Biden wins. Mm-hmm. What is CNN gonna talk about?
Yeah. That's one thing I was like, oh man.
Who's going to watch CNN? They are literally surviving on Trump hate.
Yeah.
They'll still be talking about Trump 24/7 even when he's out of the picture.
Yeah, they are.
They won't because it's the only way they're going to be able to sustain an audience. And I think ultimately they're done. And I think Twitter's going to be following them out the door. I don't know. I mean, what do these people do with their lives besides hate Trump?
Right. That's
we understand, the left wing ideology worships power, worships raw centralized political power.
Yeah, right.
So it makes sense that they have such hatred for anything in its way, which right now, of course, is Donald Trump. And of course, he makes it personal because he actually fights back in an effective way. But yeah, I think going back to your point about the church, man, there's two sides to that coin, and we ought to be sensitive to it because it is painful, because people are going to be run out of their churches as racists. People are going to be run out of their churches as the villains, you know, and that's been, you know, we've pushed back. We've got them to retreat from critical race theory to a degree. But here's the craziest thing, Marcus. They're not admitting that they've taught critical race theory. They're not repenting of it, right? They're trying to make it sound like they never taught it. Like none of the substance of what they were teaching, from white fragility and white guilt, none of the egalitarianism that they've been pushing, like none of this is critical theory.
Right.
Critical theory is something else, right? And obviously they're far too smart to explain it to us. As simpletons, we won't get that. We won't understand critical theory if they even tried to explain it to us. So critical theory is not something they're doing. All this other stuff they're doing, they're going to keep pushing substance and deny the label.
Right.
But I do think, you know, we've pushed back on that. And of course, Trump slammed the door in their face when he did his executive order. But I do think ultimately the threshing that's going on, it's going to have long-term benefits, because look at Nine Mark's article the other day that I shared with you. Remember that, when they came out and Jonathan Lehman tried to talk about theonomy? Did you listen to that?
Oh yeah, man. Yeah, I listened to most of it. I just got so bored and irritated by it.
It was pitiful. But here's the thing, man. You see that after the Cross Politics boys took him for a ride when they asked him about bestiality. I mean, he he did not expect to get that question. And it was at that point, I think, he realized what he was up against. I don't think they honestly thought they would get an intellectual resistance. I think they thought we were a bunch of peasants, and they were going to run all over us.
Well,
that's
the problem with the internet. Is it forces someone like Tim Keller to come off of his pedestal and talk to someone like me.
To the plebs.
The
plebs.
Yeah, just, I mean, you know, everyone's like, you know, all I did was share some screenshots and said, hey, they're registered as Democrats. They've been pretending to be Democrats. They've been encouraging people not to vote for Trump, and now they're registered as Democrats, and, you know, we should mark them as such. And then they all come out, and they're like, oh, well, wait a minute. We have to be Democrats in order to, like, pick the lesser of the Democrats. And it's just like, well, one, if that's true, then why not? If that is true, and you have to pick the lesser of the Democrats, is Trump a lesser of the Democrats?
Right. Apply the logic.
You have to say, of course.
Right.
Right? But then they're against Trump, so he's too much of a conservative and not enough of a Democrat.
Yeah, I like what Nate Schloman says when he says that it's not he said it's not that we're being told you can't vote for the lesser of two evils. That's not the issue anymore. Mm-hmm. That was 2016.
Yeah.
The issue in 2020 is they're being told they can vote for the greater of two evils.
Right. That's right.
That's
exactly right. Yeah. No, absolutely. Right.
It's not the greater of two evils. It's not about the lesser of two evils.
Yeah, but these people, like, they're you know, for Tim Keller to come out and say, oh, well, we have to vote this way because we have to pick, you know, the lesser in the primaries because the Democrat is going to win. All of Tim Keller's influence, and he can't do anything about getting a conservative in the office. Like, I just don't believe that at all.
He's not interested.
Tim Keller can write for the New York Times anytime he wants.
Right. Right. Right, as long as he's national,
and you can't influence an election,
right?
With all the money and power and the Gospel Coalition and all these things, and you can't even attempt to get a conservative into office. I don't buy that at all. Not one bit.
The kingdom's not this world. We don't do that here. No, I'm just kidding. Look, I think we ought to look at their behavior in 2016 and look at their behavior now and point out the contradiction. It's a double standard. In 2016, what were they telling the evangelicals that wanted to vote for Trump? You need to check yourself. You might not even be a Christian if you wanted to vote for Trump in 2016. And what are they saying now in 2020? You have to be united with Christians who say they want to vote for Democrats. Right. Well, where was that standard in 2016? You were abusive to evangelical Trump supporters. Marcus, I didn't vote for Trump in 2016. I was very critical of Trump and his supporters, but one thing that
I didn't support Trump in 2016 either. I was very outspoken. Somebody posted a Twitter message that said that I posted in 2016 that was like, do you honestly think that an adulterer, three times married, Playboy is going to put in, you know, pro-life judges or whatever?
He did.
Glad I was wrong about that.
Yep. Do we honestly think Nebuchadnezzar or Cyrus didn't have multiple wives, wasn't a womanizer? You know what I'm saying? But regardless, that's a whole other conversation. My point is they were terribly abusive to evangelical Trump supporters, and I wasn't one. But it was so abusive that it offended me. Like the fact that a guy like Russell Moore would run to the Washington Post and write about conservative Christians that are ruining their witness by voting for Trump and really should see if they really are Christians because they're voting for Trump. They should. And now here we are in 2020, and it's like the exact opposite standard for the progressive contingency in all these urban dysfunctional churches. They're trying to bend over backwards for them. And the progressives should be welcomed and open arms and never challenged, on any of their thinking in regards to political theology, because obviously Christianity in their mind and their theology is apolitical. I don't know how they get there. I don't know how on earth they get there. But the funny thing about Lehman and Nine Marks talking about theonomy was, here they are. They're trying to, like you were saying, they want social media because they want to exponentially grow their platforms. Mm-hmm. But they hate social media because then they now have to be cross-examined by the peasants. And right, they're
it's like when we said, I think it was me and AD, we were joking on how Russell Moore has never been off script and he's never appeared to be casual or like said anything without like three or four organizations like monitoring every script. And we were laughing about how he's going to lose on social media unless he comes out and tries to be normal. And he made this video the very next week of him just off script giving a tour of his library. And we were just like, dude, they fail at even being normal.
Right. Yeah.
Like, that's another that's just the most, that's like the most safest. And I think he did a video about like Fortnite and how his kid plays Fortnite or something. Like he just, and it was just so bad.
Eating rainbow.
Yeah, it was just so bad. And it's like these people have locked themselves away. It's sort of like these people have become what people say. They've become as antisocial as people say that homeschool kids become.
Right.
Like in real life, they don't know how to like speak to regular people. They have no social skills and no ability to do that. But anyway, let's after the election, let's circle back around and talk about what happened, because this is really good. It was fun.
Yeah. So absolutely. I'm working every day, so it might have to be, I don't know, Thanksgiving weekend or something. They've got me. They literally got me.
Whatever, where I work. We'll circle around. This was fun, man. I enjoyed it. It was good.
Oh, I'm having a blast.
You're like the reformed Frank Luntz. I've been checking your page for the polls. I'm looking forward to seeing. All right. Before we wrap it up, Trump wins tomorrow. How many electoral votes?
Okay, so all right, let me say his range is 260 to 326. I think he's going to, let's say 306, what he got in 2016. Maybe he's, if he gets 316 with Minnesota and then 326 with Nevada and New Hampshire, I think the three states he could add to it are Minnesota, Nevada, and New Hampshire. That puts him at 326. If we start talking about – nobody's talked about New Mexico, Virginia, Colorado, or Maine, and that would really be his ceiling. I can't imagine him winning, like you said, you know, California, Washington, Oregon,
or Virginia. But
well, it's an uphill battle. But he's got 39% Hispanic and 23% Black. It's doable. And not only that, Marcus, you know, they weren't able to do their ballot harvesting at college campuses like they used to because of COVID. Their youth vote, when I say youth vote, I mean the millennial vote, and also the 18 to 24 vote is way down. And who would have guessed that they wouldn't come out for an 78-year-old geriatric, candidate? They can't remember what day of the week it is, and his sidekick that's a dirty cop and thinks Tupac is the greatest rapper alive. The young folks won't turn out for that.
Right.
Terribly shocked. Right, terribly
right,
shocked.
Right. All right, man. Well, Rhett, it's been great. It's been great to talk to you again, man. And we'll go ahead and wrap it up here.
Good catching up. I'm glad. I hope you feel better about it now.
Yeah, man. I feel good. I'm feeling encouraged. So we'll see what happens. But everybody else, thanks for watching. Thanks for commenting in the chat. And we'll be back soon. And don't forget to watch the Cross Politic Election Day special tomorrow. It'll be live. Maybe around 8, maybe a little earlier. I'm not sure, but it'll be
better than anything on TV.
Dude, you know what? Just laughing. Don't watch that. Yeah, just laughing and feasting and just knowing that Christ is king no matter what happens. It'll be a really great time. So, all right, guys. Thanks, everybody for watching, and we'll see you later.